What's up, NBA fans? We're recording this the night of a big murder happening in the San Joaquin Valley, Sacramento, the capital of California, the capital of the Beam, the capital and the crime scene of the Sacramento Kings murdering, destroying, dismantling the Warriors dynasty, who will be missing the playoffs. Since they had that 1 year they didn't make the playoffs, but really you take that year out and this is only be the second time they're gonna miss the actual playoffs since I believe like 2014. I think, Sean, I don't even actually know the exact date.
Well, Alan, they did miss the playoffs that 1 year, 2020?
Yes.
Or 2021, when they had Klay Thompson out with the ACL, Steph Curry was out with injury.
Right, so this will be the second time they missed the playoffs since 2014 or something.
Yeah, probably 2013, 2014. Yeah, pretty crazy. We've, for most of our adult lives, have seen this dynasty as part of the NBA.
Yes, exactly. College saw the rise and graduated college with them still being on top and starting to really come up. And now here we are with Keegan Murray, 32 points, 8 3-pointers, and the Splash Brothers, 22 points and 3 3-pointers. Just a way of showing the changing of the guard here a little bit, where Keegan Murray had a terrible playoff series against these guys last year. And tonight he showed up. Sabonis showed up. The Fox showed up. And the Splash Brothers just think they didn't quite show up. The Warriors made a late run there in the third quarter to kind of give one last final push. But by the fourth quarter, this game looked like it was over. Once the spirit is dead, I say, you know, the body will follow. And that's exactly what these Warriors looked like out there in Sacramento right just now, just over 20 minutes ago.
Man, and that Splash Brothers statistic of the 22 points was really just Steph Curry. I'm pretty sure Klay Thompson had 0 points this game.
it's very possible. I guess we can pull up the box score to verify that. But yeah, I mean, I didn't really think it would go down this way. The Warriors are just always sneaky good. They always seem to find a way to figure it out, and tonight they just didn't. And on a scale of 1 to 10, Sean, are you pretty surprised or shocked by this, or did you see this coming going into tonight?
I would say I'm surprised. I'd say like a 7 out of 10 in the fact that the Warriors got destroyed by so much. Like, this game wasn't even close. I mean, they made a few runs and they were in single digits for a good portion of the first half, but I mean, the Kings came out swinging against them and they really didn't look back. And I was very surprised to see the Warriors just kind of not have anything left at the end of the day in a do or die situation, in a situation we've seen them in so many times. Time and again, they've come out on top, but this time they just did not look like the same team. The Kings look like the hungrier team, the team that really wanted it more.
Yeah.
Obviously for them, a very disappointing end of the regular season where, you know, you have this, you know, all these expectations on you from being the 3 seed last year and having a good season. And then it's all kind of fell apart with Malik Monk and Kevin Huerter both getting injured. But then you have Keon Ellis stepping up. So a whole roller coaster of emotions for this team. And yeah, I guess, yeah, that's what prevents me from it being a complete surprise, because I knew they'd be hungry coming into it.
Yeah, and I think Mike Brown was playing for his job a little here, too. I think if the Kings didn't win this game, and it's a hard sell. It's a hard sell to bring Mike Brown back, or to not try to blow something up with this team, given the, you know, obviously trading Tyrese Haliburton and then disappointing first-round exit last year. And how they started the season this year to be eliminated in the play-in, that would have been quite the crushing blow to the Kings. But to the other side of the Curry and Thompson stat that I read off, you know, you're right, Sean. I didn't pick up on the irony of that stat being that 22 of those points were completely Steph Curry. Klay Thompson with a disastrous 0 for 10 from the field, 0 for 6. Not a single shot made, not a single point recorded.
No free throws, nothing.
Nothing.
I think it's safe to say that this is going to be our worst performance of the week right here.
What's crazy here is that he doesn't have the worst plus or minus in this from the starting five.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Andrew Wiggins. Negative 25 at 4 for 11, 3 turnovers and 12 points. 3 for 5 from the free throw line. He is the winner for the worst plus or minus. I gotta say, it's impressive to not have the worst plus or minus when you go 0 for 10.
I mean, he's just not really doing anything out there. I guess you could argue he's not doing as much bad things as he could have been.
Right.
But yeah, at the end of the day, it was all in a losing effort. And man, with Klay Thompson's contract done with the Warriors right now, obviously he could re-sign with them. But man, with how he looked this year and just how the team kind of went through its ups and downs. I mean, at the end of the day, 46-36 is a hell of a record still.
This is
why the play-in is such a good idea, right? Because these teams that went 46-36, finished one game behind the Lakers for the eighth seed, deserve a chance to, one last chance to get into the playoffs. And for the Warriors, they definitely earned their way to it. But at the end of the day, you know, all these teams are pretty worthy at this point. The West is so deep, and the Warriors are just a little aged out now, and it's good. This offseason could be very interesting. Obviously, the most boring thing that could happen is that Klay Thompson signs for like a 2-year tiny little deal or something, but it could be the first domino to fall too.
Mm-hmm. Here's another name for you. Chris Paul, 1 for 3 tonight, 3 points, 18 minutes.
Oh.
Not much of the savior. I mean, Andrew Kuminga did have that huge surge, obviously, three quarters into the season, and I think he would be I don't know if he'll finish top two and most improved player, but I think I'd know him down in within the top three.
Oh, sure, he's definitely in there. But yeah, Chris Paul too, and I mean his salary isn't fully guaranteed for next year, so maybe they can get out of that somehow too. But yeah, that was a really, really bad point for them also.
Yeah, so whether. Do you think they bring him back? Do they find another team to take his deal?
Oh, I would put him in San Antonio, man. Trade him to San Antonio. Let him play with Wembanyama. Please, just give Wemby any veterans. They have so much cap space too. They could just take that.
Yeah, it does feel like it's a fit for Chris Paul here. The Golden State Warriors right into the sun, and the Sacramento Kings move on, and we'll play against the Pelicans, who lost that close one to the Lakers.
Oh man, did you get a chance to watch that game, Alan?
I did get a chance to watch it.
how was that for a Laker fan? Were you just, how was your heart? Are you doing okay?
I didn't even watch the first half because I was just like, the Lakers are gonna lose this game.
Oh,
I just
my
know
gosh.
They're gonna lose this
but
game.
But they were winning a lot of the first half too, and still didn't watch it.
I just went into it with such a pessimistic attitude.
And
it was just like a defense mechanism, because I just felt like they're gonna lose this game. And they're gonna lose it in a very close manner. And they almost lost it. But I do think
they've had the Pelicans number the whole year, and you've still thought that?
I thought the Pelicans were frankly going to come out looking a little tougher, a little stronger in the beginning. I really thought they were going to come into this game and just try to run the Lakers off the floor. Force LeBron deep into the well. but they really didn't. I mean, the Lakers came and matched them, punch for punch with the intensity. And I do think it's poetic. It's sort of poetic that D'Angelo Russell was the one who hit that corner three to just really put the game away, because I think that's the story there, is that like LeBron's legs are sort of slowing down here. But D'Angelo Russell has had an incredible last few months here, and for him to hit that clutch three, it's poetic. And I think it's also just also part of the story with this franchise that Zion sort of has the best game of the year here, cannot close the deal enough to put his team there, because he has to walk away with an injury, and it's tough. Frankly, it doesn't look like it'll be a serious one, but it's just so ill-timed, and it makes me really question whether we'll actually see the full product of Zion Williamson in the NBA playoffs. Like it's just sort of frustrating.
Which I mean, part of you as a Laker fan is probably kind of relieved that happened, because
right.
My God, did you guys have absolutely no answer for this man?
Yep.
And on very few teams would. I mean, peak Zion, I mean, this is exactly what we wanted to see from him when he was drafted number one overall. This is what we thought he could become, and he was actually meeting this potential finally.
Right.
We're seeing the unstoppable force. I mean, he scored a season-high 40 points in this game, and it kind of just looked like he just jumped too hard, which he's very prone to doing. It's just such a – it's an anomaly that he is able to injure himself because his body is able to produce power that it actually can't handle. I don't know if you've ever seen My Hero Academia, the anime.
I haven't, but I know the characters because of my nephew.
Yes, it reminds me of the main character in that early on when, like, he could not handle the power that his body could produce. So every time he threw a punch that was a little too hard, he'd end up, like, breaking his arm.
Right.
And it seems like Zion is the actual real-life representation of this power, because this is not the first time this has happened to him. He does this routinely at this point. And it's just so frustrating to see because, man, they really did have a chance in this game. They were down big. I think the Lakers had an 18-point lead at one point, and Zion just decided, I'm going to take over this game. He ran every offensive possession. He went at LeBron. He went at AD. He went through double teams, and no one could stop him. And for him to end it like this, where he didn't even really get a chance to win the game for his team, is pretty crushing for me as an NBA fan.
Yeah, and the Pelicans just look sputtered after Zion went out. Like, he goes out, but it was still a one possession game. Like,
yeah,
you still have a shot at that point. Yeah, it doesn't matter who you're. If you're an NBA team at that point, it's anybody can win.
Well, that's the thing. They stayed punch for punch with the Lakers all the way until the last minute, when they just had one possession where they needed to score and they didn't, and then the Lakers were able to close it out with all those clutch free throws.
But even before that, they just looked sputtered, where they had that sequence where they played terrific defense. Jose Alvarado took the ball, and then he just made this boneheaded decision of like...
Oh, yeah. He should have gone for the layup, right?
Right, instead yeah. And then,
yeah.
So instead of scoring and matching the Lakers punch for punch all the way to the finish line, they just go back-to-back turnovers, and that was the game.
Well, that's the hard part too, right? When it's the guy that's supposed to be making that play is instead Jose Alvarado.
Right.
And it should have been Zion. But like, let's give credit to Jose Alvarado too. This guy had the best game of his life. Like, oh my gosh, he sprained both his ankles in this game, and he still played through it, made it look like he wasn't even that hurt. Oh, maybe he was overplaying it when they actually got sprained, but I was like, dude, this guy sprained both his ankles. How is he still out there? And he was still making great plays, defensive plays, getting in D'Angelo Russell's face. And at the end, it wasn't enough, because CJ McCollum did not come to play. Brandon Ingram did not come to play. And it's shocking for this team that, I mean, we're seeing a repeat of last year for them when they again lost two play-in games and didn't make the playoffs, and they're doing the same thing here.
I was actually also going to say a repeat of the play-in game as the play, yeah. Oh, not the play-in, the NBA Cup game.
Oh, yeah, that too.
Yeah, where it's like, yeah, and it's interesting because it's like Zion was the one who took the most flack for that game. And fair enough, but it was the whole Pelicans team that just didn't show up to play. And today, Zion woke up. But yes, I mean, this is what's most impressive about Zion's performance, is that like his play is just based on power. Like, Jokic's game is based on, you know, team dynamics, just being able to see the court, make the right play. Luka is just so skilled and it's got weird pacing stuff. But Zion's game is just power. Like, and the fact that he can just get to the rim by Anthony Davis being down there from the Lakers side, and the Pelicans shooting 9 for 30 from the 3-point line, and you know, CJ McCollum playing 30 minutes, but he's shooting 1 for 9, 4 for 15 from the field. Like, there's no spacing. You're not forcing the Lakers, you know, to open the lane up for Zion. They were closing in on him that whole third quarter, and Zion was still able to make it work. So CJ just shows up and BI shows up a little better, and this would be a really tough game for the Lakers to play.
Different story.
They have a hard time chasing down and closing out on shooters when they're knocking them down. So this was this.
Yeah.
I'm impressed. I'm surprised that the Pelicans came out like this, and I think they need to look at themselves in the mirror and see, because they've had a hell of a season and they're watching it just slip through their hands right now.
Oh man, it would be heartbreaking because, man, I've always wanted to just see Zion and see CJ McCollum finally get their way, because, you know, CJ on the Blazers obviously never really, you know, got to the pinnacle either. Mm-hmm. But man, it just seems like they're going to come up short again. I mean, we're looking at this matchup against the Kings now, where they've actually had the Kings number every game this season. Like, the point differential is like out of control too. Like, they just mm-hmm. absolutely dominate the Kings, but without Zion, probably a hobbled Alvarado and Brandon Ingram just not looking right.
Yeah.
I think this could be the perfect storm for these Kings to get back in the playoffs.
Yeah, and I mean, the Kings are just coming off probably the biggest win in their franchise since like the early 2000s. So they wanted this team. They wanted to be the ones that took them down. And I mean, I think they're going to go into that game like nobody can touch them. And no surprise here. So I'm reading Shams. I just looked up Shams's account to see if he tweeted about Zion, and I see it here. Zion Williamson is believed to have suffered a left hamstring injury. So that's all that's being said. So hopefully
hamstring injuries do not go away in 2 days, I'll tell you that much.
Yeah, if it's a strain, then yeah, we're talking about what, a month or so, but definitely not
for
not
Zion
a few days.
Definitely, yeah. Especially for Zion. But let's look at the other side of this now. On a more positive note, the Lakers get their rematch against the Nuggets in round one. How you feeling about that, Alan?
Oof, you know, this has been the debate within Twitter circles, whether or not the Lakers throw this game. And that's also why I think I went into it with such a pessimistic attitude, because I was like, I think the Lakers are going to throw this game away. Like, no. I feel like part of them is going to have that in the back of their mind when it's the fourth quarter. You know, you're huffing and puffing, shots aren't falling, and they're like, we'll just give it to the Pelicans. That way we get to avoid Denver. Glad that didn't happen.
I do not buy into the lunacy that is that strategy of risking it all to put yourself in an 8-seed do or die situation where you might not even get to play against OKC. It's absolute buffoonery, in my opinion.
And you're totally right. I mean, you do that and you risk playing against a sneaky good Warriors team that you went into triple overtime. Just a month ago.
Kings team.
Yeah, exactly. I think if you can win it, you take the win. And I'm not sure if the Lakers actually seriously ever considered it, but as fans, that was the talk of the town all over Lakers Twitter. Yeah. So
if you want to be the best, you got to beat the best. That's what I say.
Yeah, exactly. So how do I feel about them going against Denver? Not very good. I just don't see an avenue for the Lakers to win this. I mean, we've played them a few. The season series is just, I think it's 3-0 to the Nuggets. I don't think we beat them once this year. And it's a tough one. I mean, if there's a team that the Lakers know well, though, it's going to be that one. I was really hoping that the Timberwolves would be the team that they ended up ultimately falling into their laps to match up with.
Yeah.
But the Nuggets is going to be rough, man. is there an avenue for a win? Possibly. I mean, we got a brand new D'Angelo Russell here. Yeah. Anthony Davis is healthy. I don't know if LeBron can really has something cooked up strategically. I don't know, but I just don't see an avenue for them to win. It's Denver's tough. Denver is tough and they're healthy. There's no reason for them. They don't look any weaker. They look stronger than they've ever had. There's no reason for me to think they're any weaker than last year.
Yeah, and you are correct. The Nuggets did sweep the season series against the Lakers 3-0. So that obviously is not very encouraging either. So, I mean, yeah, you come into this year with pretty much the same team as last year. I mean, you could add in Spencer Dinwiddie. You could add in Gabe Vincent, who I didn't even know was back, to be honest. Like, I thought he was just done for the season. So to see him out there tonight, I was like, wait, what? When did Gabe Vincent come back? Was it just for this game? Did he play in the regular season at all?
He played a few games in the regular season. I think he literally came back like right towards the end there.
Huh. Yeah, I didn't even notice. But yeah, he was out there contributing. I don't know if that's enough, though, because you're going to need AD to really just play the best basketball of his life against Jokic, which, I mean, I'm really excited to see the matchup. You know, if AD's up to the challenge, then it will be a hell of a series. But yeah, I'm pretty sure very few people are going to be taking the Lakers to win this one in Vegas.
Yeah, we just don't have enough weapons. And I think one of the big ones is we still don't have Vanderbilt back. And yeah. I think Vanderbilt is like the crucial piece because he's just so switchable and he can run around chasing Aaron Gordon while at the same time chasing down Jamal Murray and Michael Porter Jr. So, I mean, it's just every game has been sort of a repeat. I think the Lakers genuinely get amped to play them. And every game has played out the same where the Lakers are hanging in there. And then at some point in the fourth quarter, Denver's just like, well, yeah, you know, this has been fun, but see you later.
It's just a matter of, do the Lakers have the personnel to match up against Denver? We'll see. I think that after 10 games against them, both in this regular season and, well, I guess not 10, but what was it, 5 games, or they get swept in the playoffs last year?
Oh, they got swept.
Okay, yeah. So 7 games against them. Hopefully you have a game plan against them this time around that maybe you could throw a few different looks at them. But yeah, ultimately, yeah, I'm going to have to give it to the Nuggets. I'll give the Lakers, I think they'll win one or two games in this series.
I think they can win one.
I'll even go with two. Hell,
you'll go
whatever.
With two?
Yeah, you know, whatever. I'll go with two. I want to believe in LeBron just being able to just muscle out a few more wins before, you know, the flame gets a little dimmer.
Yeah, they're gonna need a miracle from the divine to stand a chance. I think it's 5 games. They win one in Staples for the fans. Denver gives them that, but they'll quickly end it back at home.
Fair enough.
Few quick thoughts here before jumping into the other playoff matchups is Drew Holiday, 4-year, $135 million extension to stay with the Celtics. I don't even know if that's a big dollar number anymore relative to the where the league is going, but it feels absurd. Yeah.
I think it's absurd for a 33-year-old guard, no?
I totally agree. Yeah, at 37, this guy is still going to be on the payroll. And I mean, Drew Holiday's had a great year for sure. And he's probably been, depending if they win the title, he could, and between him and Porzingis could be the missing chess pieces they needed for that squad. Yeah. And clearly we can see who's missing who a little bit more here when you're looking at the two records between the Bucks and the Celtics.
Yeah, it's a very interesting acquisition to keep him around like this such a long term, because I mean, this is a guy that I think contemplated retirement before last season. And now he's signed on for another 4 years. And I mean, obviously his role's really diminished with the Celtics because they don't need him to do as much stuff. But I still feel like he's the same player deep down. If they needed him to take over, he could. But he doesn't have to because he's like the 5th best player on this team. So, yeah, for them to make this deal, I don't know. It's interesting because you already have your two megastars with Tatum and Brown on the payroll. And then you have this one. It's like, can you afford Derek White now? I think is the big question. And I honestly don't think you can. I think he's going to get such a huge deal from another team that he's gone. And so that this might be them conceding that if we can't keep Derek White, at least we keep Drew Holiday around.
Yeah, that's the first thing that stood out to me when the news came out is like, what does this mean for Derek White? Does that mean they're just going to let him go? Which kind of sucks because Derek White is sort of like the hometown hero. Yeah. And again, another probably guy that should finish within the top three of most improved, but he'll probably finish more like outside of that. But he took huge strides in his game this year. I had no idea that he had what he had in his bag. Like, I did not know he was capable of that improvement.
Yeah, he could play make, he could shoot, he defended at an all NBA level, I'd say.
Yep.
Everything he did was extremely underrated because the Celtics' success was so easy to distribute across all of these great players that they have. But he was easily, I think, their third best player this year.
Yeah, exactly. And on the Drew Holiday point, you want to know how you get a pay raise despite your point average being down is your 3-point shooting goes up. Drew Holiday last year averaged 19 points. This year, he's at 12. But on the 3-pointer side, He shot 38% last year, and he's shooting 43% from the three this year.
There you go.
That's how you get yourself a pay raise at 33 years old.
Yep. If you get less opportunity, you got to be more efficient with it. And he does everything that they need him to do.
Yeah, exactly. And also, like, the storyline of that goes to this dude as well. Grayson Allen, 4-year, $70 million extension. I did not have that on my bingo card that this guy would be around for this much longer in the NBA.
Yeah, obviously, honestly, it's a bargain deal. The crazy part is that Grayson Allen was somehow the most reliable player on the Suns team, on a team with just really consistent star power with Kevin Durant and Devin Booker. And you had Bradley Beal out for most of the year, and Grayson Allen ended up being the linchpin that kind of held everything together, just like through all the injuries they had. They had really bad stretches of the season where they weren't winning a lot of games, and Grayson Allen was putting up really good numbers and was leading the league in three-point percentage.
Yes, I forgot about that. He was a leader. What a hell of a return for the Suns, because he was just a part of like this throwaway trade, right?
Nurkic one of those like minimum contract guys. Like let's get Ayton out of here and bring in other salary guys.
Yeah, to find like a basically your starter here, in a guard like this guy who's shooting 46% from three. I had to double check that's crazy. What it is on 13-point shooting. In many ways, you are talking about a bargain here, Sean, because I would love to do the conversion math of what this is in today's NBA terms relative to like what Davis Bertans and some of those guys got. Duncan Robinson got
Fred like four years.
Yeah, 4 years ago, because I bet it is a per year number a lot bigger than that.
I mean, if you can get a guy for under $20 million in today's NBA that's a starter, that's a steal, honestly. Like, this still does put a huge financial strain on the Suns, because you already had your three max guys, you already had Nurkic there too, and with this extension, the Suns are going to be paying over $205 million in salary next year, which is above the luxury tax and the second apron, far far above them. They do not care about salary at all, which, you know, I applaud. You know, the owner's trying to win, so he's keeping the pieces that you need to win with. So, yeah. Money be damned.
Yeah, this is the new era of the NBA. I mean, get the cheap guys out and bring in the multi-billionaires so they can pay these multiple repeater tax offenses. But I think it's a win for the fans, because, you know, getting owners like this, because, we get the best product that we can. And hell, we're seeing it in the Western Conference, in the Pacific Division alone, where every single team is in the playoffs. Every single team in the Pacific Division won well over half their games. And let's buckle up. I can't wait for the playoffs to start here with the Suns.
Yes.
Which I guess is a perfect transition to our playoff preview here. Let's just start there.
Well, do we want to go to the East play-in first? Do you want any thoughts on that?
I forgot about the East play-in.
Yeah. I know there's still playoff spots to be had, my guy.
Yeah, I guess I forgot. Actually, this one is pretty good. Actually, this one is interesting. Heat versus Sixers. This one is interesting because of, I think the Sixers, they look like they could make some noise here if they advance. The Heat at the same time as well. The Sixers winning 8 straight, but here in the play-in, I don't really know what to think of this one, of who could win this one and who I want to win. I think I'm just looking for a good game out of these two guys.
Yeah, honestly, I just hope both these teams make it and they don't fumble some horrible game to either the Bulls or the Hawks. Mm-hmm. Because I think, and this is where I think the play-in, like, it was really good for the West and is really bad for the East, because the Bulls and the Hawks do not deserve a chance to make the playoffs.
No.
It's just, like, the Hawks, did they even win 40 games this year? Like, they didn't even win half their games, yet they're going to have a chance to make the playoffs. I just think it's kind of criminal, honestly. Yeah. Like, the Heat and the Sixers are so much better than both these teams, but they could easily lose in a one-game elimination to them, and then we're robbed of a very good first-round series either way against the Celtics. If it's Celtics versus Heat, that's such a great rematch of last year. as super exciting. If it's Celtics Sixers, that's still epic because you got Joel and Embiid returning. The Sixers are one of the hottest teams in the league to end the season. You'd still, you know, give them a puncher's chance against these Celtics. So they better both make it. That's all I'm saying, because yeah. I do not want to watch the Bulls or the Hawks get absolutely massacred by the Celtics.
I agree. I mean, look at we could just look at the last 10 game records between these two. 76ers 8-2, Miami 7-3.
Yeah.
Bulls 5-5. The Hawks 3-7. Hawks have lost six games in a row. They've lost six games in a row going into this play-in tournament. The best guy on this team called it quits a few months ago.
And Trae Young came back for the last few games and they still lost them.
Oh, he's back. Is he really back?
He's back. Trae Young's back. Isn't that ridiculous?
Yeah, I haven't even been paying attention to this team at all. I didn't realize Trae Young is back.
It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. There's still a terrible team. And this is probably going to be Trae Young's last game, or maybe two games if they get past the Bulls.
Yeah.
I think the speculations run wild with there's no way he keeps being a Hawk with how bad the last 2 years have been. So yeah, I just hope the Heat and the Sixers make it. I don't really care who wins in their game against each other, but the one that loses better damn well beat the Bulls or the Hawks.
Yes, I agree. So now I remember what point I was going to make earlier, that before I terribly fumbled my thoughts, is it's interesting because I feel like New York has had an incredible season and has found themselves in the second seed, but yet they don't feel like a second seed to me. They feel totally beatable. And I think the 76ers and the Heat know that. So that's why I think that's why I wanted to say that play-in matchup is really interesting. So
this game tomorrow will be big, because that you feel like the Heat or the Sixers would be a favorite even against the Knicks potentially.
I think so. And I think they might know that. So I'm interested to see how they come out and play this game. Do they come out and actually vie for the win to get themselves to they're going to basically play hard to go get that seven seed, to go get themselves matched up against
the
Knicks.
And I think it's as much to go against the Knicks as it is to avoid the Celtics.
Right.
You know?
it feels like the Celtics is a guaranteed. I mean, I think the 76ers at full strength could have made it an interesting series, but I just don't think the legs are there for Embiid. So probably it would be a quick one nonetheless.
I mean, honestly, this might be the perfect scenario for Embiid. He got like 2 months rest before the start of the playoffs. He's never been this fresh going in, and he didn't look bad in the week and a half or so that he was able to play in the regular season. Get his legs back under him. Same thing with Maxey. They even got D'Anthony Melton back. So the team is whole at the right time. Man, they were 30-8. With Maxey and Embiid in the lineup in the regular season. So that's pretty much just the way the Celtics were rolling this year. So yeah. I think it could still be a good chance. But yeah, this Knicks team, man, is it just too hard for us to like see that Jalen Brunson is like a top 10 player in the league? Is that what's preventing us from seeing them as the favorite?
No, it was preventing me from seeing them the favorites that their second best player is Dante DiVincenzo. Their third best player is Josh Hart. That's what, and Isaiah Hartenstein is down in the middle. Like, that's what's preventing me from believing in them, and that's fair. To play 40 minutes over the last few weeks while a lot of these other teams have started to sort of wind down. Like, Jalen Brunson is great. I think he's having a hell of a season, and I think he's for real. But to be a second seed, no. I mean, you got to be a contender. Yeah. You got that top 10 guy, and you have like a solid starting lineup. You got your solid second guy, solid third guy, and the Knicks without Randall, without OG, they don't have that. It's just Brunson and Dante DiVincenzo, Josh Hart playing out of their minds.
I think I saw that Dante DiVincenzo played literally 53 minutes in the overtime win against the Bulls in their last regular season game to seal the two seed.
Yeah, the March was March Madness for the New York Knicks. They played every single game as if it was single elimination. And why not? I mean, I get it. You're kind of hobbled. You're going through a weak East, so get yourself to that top seed, and then, you know, anything can happen from there.
Yeah, I guess that's the scary part. Yeah, is that like for as good as the Knicks were, it also displayed how bad the rest of the East has been this regular season, because I mean, the The Knicks, I think, what was it? They're 49-33 in the regular season.
50. They got to 50.
Oh, they got to 50. Okay. So they're the only other 50-win team in, mm-hmm. In the conference outside of the Celtics, because the Bucks slid, the Cavs slid. Mm-hmm. Yeah, obviously the Sixers probably would have made it to 50 if Embiid was there for a lot of it, but they didn't either.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, it's just, it was a weak conference during the regular season this year, and the Knicks took advantage of that. And as far as playoff matchups go, I think the numbers mean absolutely nothing. I agree. I think with the way the Sixers look right now, I think they look even better than the Knicks.
Yeah, like, I wouldn't be surprised if, whether it's the Heat or the Sixers, they go to New York. New York goes up 2-0, and then the series gets more interesting from there, where the next, you know, the next team wins the both home games. I think it could easily, where like they basically start catching momentum once mm-hmm. they start figuring out the Knicks.
Yeah. I actually really do hope we get the Sixers Knicks, because I think that Maxi Brunson matchup is going to be one of the more entertaining matchups to watch in the first round, because they're just gonna go punch for punch against each other.
Yeah, exactly. I kind of would rather have the Sixers go get that, capture that seven seed, because I just feel like if Miami gets it, they're gonna make a run. Like, it just. I don't want to see
it happen all over again.
And I just don't want to see a Miami Heat run again. But it might happen. Man. Like it feels like the freaking like Moses parting the Red Sea for them. Like, and they get that seven seed, go up against the Knicks. I think they can beat the Knicks, and then
and then from there they're going up against the 3-6 matchup, which is the Bucks Pacers. Either one of those teams is very vulnerable, especially if Giannis isn't there for the Bucks.
Exactly. Like, if the Bucks somehow beat the Pacers and they kind of have a hobbled Giannis in that second round, like, it could be a repeat of last year. I could see it. I'm playing these scenarios
in
my head.
And then they go up against the Celtics again.
Yeah, and then they go up against the Celtics again in the conference final. I don't think they beat them again, but it would just be another,
but
you know.
Who would doubt them after last year, right?
Yeah, exactly. It would just be another story. I mean, and they have Tyler Harrell back this time. They got him back. So,
yeah.
They're back to full strength, but that's fun just sort of scenario planning that, because I do think this is going to be a big game. I think both these teams know what they're playing for.
Yeah, I think that's the interesting part, is that whichever one of these teams wins this seven seed game has a very good chance of making the conference finals.
Yeah, I think things are looking very vulnerable on that side of the bracket. Mm-hmm. But let's jump into the actual playoffs. 3-seed Wolves versus 6-seed Suns. Suns winning the season series 3-0. Is it a potential upset? Some of the articles and some of the writers that I've read, this is the one that they think could be a potential upset here.
Yeah.
I mean, the Wolves have over $100 million committed to their big dudes, whereas on the other side, the Suns are running with mostly a smaller, slimmer lineup with KD, Beal, and Booker. But they also pack quite the offensive punch. Whereas the Timberwolves here pack the defensive punches, the number one defensive team, and probably looking likely like they're going to have the defensive player of the year with Rudy Gobert. But Kat is coming back, so this is going to be an exciting series. In mid-November, Durant and Booker combined for 62 points to beat this team in the regular season. What are you feeling like, Sean, for these two guys?
Man. It's so hard, because I want to see these Timber pups succeed. Like, I want it to be Anthony Edwards' time, because I mean, I've been saying it for years, Alan. You know how much I love this kid and the energy and the confidence. And when they say, "Oh, what are you gonna do about KD?" He's like, "Well, we got a Jaden McDaniels." Yeah. You know, I want to have the supreme confidence that Anthony Edwards has in his team and his abilities against what appears to be a juggernaut ready to strike. I mean, they didn't ever get the better of them in the regular season, and Karl-Anthony Towns came back, but he just kind of looks like a shell of his former self, kind of like mm-hmm. Brandon Ingram. He only averaged 10-5-5 over those final two Wolves games in the regular season, 36% shooting, so can you really rely on him? That's going to be really hard. So for me, it just seems like all of the chips are in the Suns' favor. But I want to see Anthony Edwards just overcome the odds and be the best player in this series. And I want to think he can do it. But, man, if they do it, it's going to have to take everything. And I think it's going to be a 7-game series.
Yeah, I think I see this series a lot like the Denver series last year when the Suns ran into Denver, where basically, I mean, it just looked like the Suns might actually be able to sneak their way past Denver, but ultimately Denver just had way more pieces and the size beat the Suns up at the end. Devin Booker and Durant just ran out of steam. And I think that's what the Timberwolves are going to have to rely on. They're going to have to lean on their strength that's carried them, and that's their defensive presence. Don't go small. Don't fall for the trap. Go big. Use Jaden McDaniels. Use Gobert. Nikhil Alexander-Walker, another guy off the bench who's also long that can chase them around. Another body to throw around. And, of course, Anthony Edwards has been having a hell of a year. So I think the Timberwolves just need to hang in there, take every offensive punch that the Suns give them, and I think eventually the Suns will, Devin Booker specifically and Kevin Durant specifically, will run out of steam. And I think the Timberwolves can take this. I'm going to give it to the Timberwolves in six, same as like the games that it took for Denver to take out the Suns last year.
Wow. I mean, I want that to be true because, I mean, when this Suns team was constructed, I was like, dude, they shouldn't get Bradley Beal too. That's unfair.
Yeah.
But I guess I didn't expect him to regress as much as he has, so I guess this makes them more of a fair team. And I like Devin Booker. I'm a big Devin Booker fan, but I'm more of an Anthony Edwards fan, so I'm gonna give it to the Wolves. I'm gonna do it in seven though, because man, I do think there are gonna be games where they do fall for the trap and they take Gobert out, and that's the thing. They have to be able to draw up a defensive scheme that makes it so Gobert doesn't come out of the game. Mm-hmm. Like they have to be able to figure out how to use him when the Suns go small. Like if they go to Kevin Durant at the five, even. In some mm-hmm. lineups, they have to figure out how Gobert can still keep with the spacing on the floor.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, look at this. Look at the Suns roster. Durant, 35. Booker, 27. Grayson Allen, 28. But then you got Bradley Beal at 30, who might as well just be 35. Eric Gordon at 35. Nurkic at 30, basically. Royce O'Neal at 30.
Yeah.
You can hold these guys off if you're the Timberwolves.
You should be able to, but yeah, Karl-Anthony Towns just it concerns me. I mean, does that mm-hmm. are you concerned about him not being there, or like is he interrupting them by being this inefficient or just not being ready?
I think they can survive through it. I'm not super concerned. I think if they can hold still on the defensive end, I think they can survive. The struggles that Towns is having to get his body back under him. I think Edwards has enough under him. I think him and Gobert's game is strong. That I think they can survive this. And the Suns on the other side are not the defensive presence team that, you know, they might see, they're going to see later on in the playoffs. I think they can survive it without having an A+ Towns.
Yeah, all right. It'll be very interesting. I think there's going to be a lot of people very split on who they're betting on in this
yeah.
one.
Yeah, yeah. The 4-seed Clippers and 5th-seed Mavs. Mm-hmm. This one hits close to home for you, Sean. And the Clippers won the regular series 2-1. But Doncic and the Mavericks, and we've been talking about this, to me, the Mavericks, same like the Miami Heat, where it feels like sort of things are opening up for them. The same thing feels like is happening for the Mavericks, where they're getting the Clippers here in the first round. They take down the Clippers and they could see a young OKC mm-hmm. team in the second round that I think could be beatable just because of that experience X factor. So all of a sudden, Luka to me and the Mavs look like a real dark horse team that could make a Cinderella run to the conference finals. And part of the reason I say that is because Doncic and the Mavs are 16-2 towards the end here of the regular season, just ending things off on fire. Kyrie Irving looks like Kyrie Irving from a few years ago, like he's found his legs again. And the Mavericks also have made key moves in the middle of the year, getting PJ Washington and Daniel Gafford, who, you know, again, these aren't guys that are like playing like super impressive, like a Derek White quite making that jump. But they're playing their roles really well, and they've helped the Mavericks in a place where they desperately need it, which is on the defensive end. So since trading for these guys, they've moved up to 7th in defensive rating since those guys debuts on February 10th. So there's a lot going the way for the Mavericks, whereas on the other side, it just looks like the Clippers are hanging on here for a little bit. They got Westbrook back the last few weeks. it looks like Kawhi may be out and could potentially miss the start of the playoffs.
Yeah, and this oh man, I just hate talking about this. I just like you're pessimistic about the Lakers' chances in any given game, yeah. I am extremely pessimistic about the Clippers' chances in this series. I want to believe they've done a good job this year of staying the course, and they had a good regular season, but the way that it all ended, it just makes me so scared of them just getting absolutely massacred in this series. Luka has been known to absolutely destroy the Clippers in the past. I think there was a regular season game where I think the Mavs were winning like by 50 points at halftime or something mm-hmm. ridiculous. I think it was like 80-30 or something stupid. So I know that Doncic just licks his lips when he sees the Clippers on the schedule. Even if we did win this regular season series, I still don't think that scares Luka off at all.
Mm-hmm.
And if Kawhi's not back yet, Just write us off. Just start booking the trips to Cancun now, because there's just no chance we win anything without him. And I'm very pessimistic based on him not coming back for any regular season games, that he'll be available for game one, because I don't know. I feel like this is one of those injuries that they're being so vague about.
Yeah.
Left knee soreness, inflammation. That's the injury. Inflammation's been keeping him out for all of these weeks. There's way more to it than they're letting on. The Clippers are notoriously bad at injury reporting.
Mm-hmm.
And Kawhi has so much of a history with knee injuries. I just do not see this boding well at all. And even Harden was sitting out the last few games with home court advantage on the line. We could have used him for at least one of those games, but he sat it out and we still got it. But at the end of the day, it seems like this team's just getting a little old. They're just maybe that whole 82 game slew is just too much for them to handle right now, and maybe Kawhi tries to come back, but I don't think he'll be himself. I think he'll be playing timid. I think he'll be worried about getting hurt again, or maybe he'll play really hard like he did in that Sun series last year, where he plays one game and tears his ACL. So
yeah,
I'm not very confident at all.
Yeah, it's tough. It's tough because you kind of, this was probably the season more so than others where the Clippers really put all their chips on the table here by making that move for Harden, making the move for Westbrook, and you know, keeping Tyronn Lue on staff, Paul George, Kawhi both being all-stars this year. Felt like the stars were aligning here for the Clippers to really go guns blazing this year, but just feels like you know, can't get over the injury hump here.
Every year, man. Why can't we just have one healthy postseason?
Yeah, it's a tough one. And Kawhi at 32, relative to the way Kevin Durant and the rest of these guys are performing, you would think you'd still get another peak year of Kawhi at 32 years old.
He just happened to play enough games to get to all NBA, though, so good for him. Glad he got his regular season award.
Yeah, so what are you thinking here, Sean? Are you making a call on who's taking this?
Mavs in five.
Mavs in five.
Mavs in five.
I'm saying Mavs. I'm taking Mavs in six. I think they finish it at home in Dallas.
The only way we even have a chance at winning this series is if Kawhi comes back. I just don't think he will. I really don't.
Yeah. Yeah, if Kawhi comes back, I still think I got the Mavs in six, but if Kawhi doesn't even make a single appearance, then I think the Mavs, yeah, take it in five.
Yeah.
Next third seed Bucks versus sixth seed Pacers. Pacers winning the regular series at 4-4-1, including their win over the Bucks in the NBA Cup games. But the Bucks here on the brink with no Giannis to start this series. Interesting development here, and it's quite the exciting series here, because we also get the dynamic point guard matchup with Tyrese Halliburton versus Damian Lillard. You get Siakam and Miles Turner down low versus Brook Lopez and Giannis. This feels like a really good matchup of a younger team showing up to the block and the older team that's sort of been dominating the Eastern Conference, trying to hold still after last year's disappointing finish to their season. But with Giannis hurt again to start the postseason, Sean, how How close to that panic button are you if you're a Bucks fan or if you're all that Bucks team?
I'm an inch away, man. I'm an inch away from that panic button. My hand's hovering right over it because all the chips are stacked against them right now. You're mm-hmm. missing your best player, the guy you run your entire offense and defense through. The Pacers beat you 4 out of 5 times in the regular season, and they're fully healthy. Mm-hmm. So I don't really see a good way out for the Bucks here. I mean, they have home court advantage. That's kind of their one saving grace here. But I mean, this team, as currently constructed, without Giannis, for Damian Lillard, this is worse than most of the Portland teams that he has going into every season. So I don't really know what they can do to beat the Pacers. It seems like they'll have their number across the board. Maybe Damian Lillard can get the better of Tyrese Haliburton in a game or two, but they are outmatched across every single starter position outside of that. And yeah, I don't think Bobby Portis is necessarily going to be the one to step up and make the difference for this team. So ultimately, this is another one where the sixth seed, just like in the West with the Suns, it could easily be the team that takes this series. I think that honestly, the advantage here could go either way, and I'm leaning towards the Pacers at this point. I'll give it to them in six.
Oof, making the bold pick. I was gonna say, I'm also slightly leaning Pacers as of today. They just seem like the hungrier team. They're not the number one offense in the league anymore, like they were just a few months ago, but they are still second. And you know, if this was the Bucks of the past, I would say the Bucks have the advantage. But this is not the Bucks of the past. They are not a top five defensive team. We thought they'd figure it out at some point, made the coaching change. They haven't figured it out. They're 19th on the defensive end. They're 6th offensively, but you're missing your best player. Even for a game or two, that could be enough for the Pacers to sneak in there and take and steal home court advantage. So, oof, it's tough. And I can't believe I'm going to say this, but yeah, I do think the Pacers, as of today, I'm going to say Pacers in six.
Do it.
Yeah, I'm locking
You're hesitant, but I'm with you, man. I don't believe in this Bucks team. I don't believe in Doc Rivers. Mm-hmm. This might go down as one of the worst coaching changes midseason ever. Like, this has been such a terrible experiment for them.
Yeah, there's been no improvement anywhere. I don't see it from a quantitative perspective. To your point of Damian, one of the worst teams Damian Lillard has carried through. I was thinking about that. I was like, without you take Giannis out of it, and yeah, you got Brooke Lopez at 35, yeah. Malik Beasley, Chris Middleton.
Yeah, like half of Chris Middleton, basically.
Yeah, Bobby Portis at 20. This is not a young crew anymore. This is quite the bundle of old guys and an athletic phenom in Giannis, but you take that phenom out and it's just a bundle of old sticks here.
Yeah, it sucks though too, right? As I love to see Dame and Giannis go, you know, have their time and try it out in the postseason. Right? We'll have to wait one more year, which sucks because Damian Lillard ain't getting any younger. Giannis can still be in his prime next year, but Damian's getting old, man. And he even showed this year, so. Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is a very, very small window.
Yeah, I agree. Wow. I think we're a damn surprise we're both in agreement here so far. 4th seed Cavs versus 5th seed Magic.
This one might be one where we disagree. I'm very interested where you're leaning on this one.
Yeah, season series is 2-2. I'm kind of disappointed here because I really wanted the Knicks versus Magic matchup. Get the all defensive matchup here.
80-75 scores.
Yes, exactly. But I mean, credit to the Magic. They've been here all year. I was never really a believer, never wanted to really peek under the hood and see what the hell this team is about. But I have now the last month and a half, and I like what I'm seeing. This is truly a young team who plays hard. It's extremely switchable, can guard 1 through 5, has an incredible 5-out defense, and Banchero is a heck of a player. I mean, it's kind of crazy that this guy doesn't get more flash, you know, I guess. Like, he was great at Duke, and we kind of all just said, well, he looks like he's NBA ready, so he'll be fine. And that's kind of this the way people have treated his stardom is just like he's standard. He's fine. Yeah.
You know what's really funny is that I've listened to multiple NBA podcasts this week, and all of them talk about how little Paolo Banchero is talked about.
Yeah, that like is, it's crazy.
But all of them are talking about it though, so yeah. It's totally self-defeating. Yeah. But it's just so funny that everyone has this same sentiment, but we all see the talent and we see what he's doing there, and we feel like everyone's writing it off because it's not talked about enough, but now everyone's talking about it. So it's kind of funny.
Yeah, I mean, I just remember watching him at Duke, and everybody's just like, yeah, he'll be the number one draft pick. And that's like it. And that's like where the sentence ended. And I'd be like, well, this guy's actually really good at Duke. Like, he's not just like your standard middle of the pack draft pick.
He's not just, he's good because he went to Duke. No, like he is a standout even at Duke.
Yeah, exactly. Like Cade Cunningham to me felt like more of just like a middle of the pack number one pick. And I think his NBA career is great. But so far, it's been sort of that. Where it's like he's a good player, but still question marks of like how good. But Banchero was good at Duke, got drafted one, went to the Magic, and immediately became their leading scorer. The offense started running immediately through him. And now in his sophomore year, he's taken this team into the playoffs. And it's not just because of him, but
he made the All Star game.
Yeah, and he made the All-Star game. And so it's like, this guy is like, yes, he's followed the storyline of other great players. He's not reinventing anything. But he's also really good. Like,
this is all you could ask for from a number one overall pick. This is honestly exceeding expectations. I don't even think we expect Victor Wembanyama to make the playoffs next year.
Yeah,
but exactly. Powell's done it in year two.
Right, and he's taken, a team that didn't make any big offseason moves to add a veteran.
None.
He took
absolutely none.
Yeah, it's like the Orlando Magic are like, do what you can with what you've been given, or do the best that you can with what you've been given. This team is doing that. It's pretty cool, pretty crazy, and I like this team. On the other end, the Cavs have kind of had a very disappointing season and very up and down. I mean, obviously they've had some gems, I think, as a result of like how up and down their lineups have been. And with finding, Jared Allen having a resurgence in his career, he looked probably his second best year ever, second only to the other year where he made an all-star, I forgot, win with the Brooklyn Nets.
Right, yeah.
And then I'm forgetting this guy's name. Who's the guard that's just been like?
Darius Garland?
Not Darius Garland. The white dude. What's Max Strus?
Oh, Max Strus.
Max Strus? Max Strus has looked good at some points this year.
He has. Not better than Gabe Vincent has.
Yeah, exactly. So I think those two guys have had good years, but I think the guys that really mattered, it was Donovan Mitchell and Evan Mobley having a better body of work throughout the whole year. We just really didn't get that from them this year, or Darius Garland. Yeah. So I just don't know what this team is going to be, and to me they seem beatable. In the playoffs right now.
They really do, which is so sad because, the talent on this team, we've seen Evan Mobley and what he can do on both sides of the floor. And Darius Garland obviously making huge jumps last year and really proving that he is the piece that deserved to stay between him and Sexton. And Donovan Mitchell, you expect him to be that Utah Jazz Mitchell that just took over playoff games, that went punch for punch with Jamal Murray in the bubble, that scored 50 points routinely in these playoff rounds. And we didn't get a lick of that last year. The Knicks absolutely shut him down.
Mm-hmm.
And so for him, this is a huge chance at redemption here against a completely young, underdeveloped, no playoff experience Magic team. This should be an easy first-round win for the Cavs. Donovan Mitchell should absolutely dominate this series and prove that he was worth the, five first-round picks and Lauri Markkanen that they gave up for him. Mm-hmm. This is it. If you flame out in another first-round exit to a team that you were supposed to beat, it's over. For both sides. Mitchell's not coming back, and the Cavs don't want him back because this is not the formula. So you have to prove that you're worth it right here. Prove that you're a top 10 player in the playoffs, and all is forgiven. But if you don't, it goes out the window very fast.
Yeah, and here's the sad thing about for the Cavs, too, is that they're playing a team almost the same, almost identical to the next team of last year.
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah, a defensive juggernaut, tough time scoring the ball, but second in defense, and, you know, just a team that's just completely switchable, got youth and can, you know, it's just tough to find who to attack on the off for Donovan Mitchell, who to hunt for him in the pick and roll, because yeah. All these guys can match up one for one against Donovan Mitchell. So it seems like the Cavs should be winning this series. You're right, Sean, but it doesn't feel like it. And based off what I've seen from the Magic, they seem unpredictable. I'm not sure what we're going to get. Maybe I'm wrong in the Cavs sweep, but I think I'm going to go with the Magic in six.
Wow.
Yeah.
I thought you might, which is why I'm like, okay, I think this is the one where we're going to dissent a little bit, because yeah. I'm going to go with the Cavs in six.
Okay.
I think that, yeah, they're going to give a few games up to the Magic, but ultimately the playoff experience will win out for the Cavs. I think it's just not the Magic's time yet.
Yeah. The Orlando Magic. Have you heard the song that they play when they win? Kind of like the Kings.
Orlando Magic.
The classic tune. I just want to hear. We're going to hear that four times. So just get to four times, Orlando. Just get to four times and let's get this win. But yes, I mean, if we look at the top of guys on getting 20 minutes or more on this roster, outside of Gary Harris, everybody's either 25 years or younger. Crazy. Markelle Fultz is the second oldest guy. Yeah,
don't they have Joe Ingles on this team too?
Yeah, Joe Ingles, 17 minutes a game. I'm not considering him a prime part of the rotation, but we might see some Joe Ingles out there.
Well, here's a question for you. So, how many minutes do you think we'll see Jonathan Isaac per game?
You know what's funny is his name actually just popped in my head that I haven't talked about
dude,
this
we're
guy.
Thinking a lot, yep.
Yeah, that we haven't talked about this guy because this dude has sort of been an interesting enigma to just kind of to just appear out of nowhere and just continue contributing positively to what the Magic have already been doing all year, which is just being hustlers and disruptive on every single possession, you know, that a body's out there for. So I don't know what ultimate impact he'll have on the series, but I do think he'll be thrown out there for sure.
I would love to see them elevate him to like 30 minutes a game, just out of nowhere. Mm-hmm. The guy that like only comes off the bench, only gets like 20 minutes a game. Just pump 30 minutes into him and see what happens. See what that does for the game for you. Will that be the difference between winning and losing?
Yeah, and I think they were sort of thinking that, because I'm looking here at his game record so far, and last two games of the year, he played 26 minutes. He was a plus two against Philadelphia and a plus nine against Milwaukee. Nothing that's impressive on the box score, but I just don't think that's his game. His game is just not to be out there and be long.
Yep.
Be a disruptor.
Is, yeah, be long. Yeah. I mean, the guy is heralded as one of the best defenders in the league when healthy. Mm-hmm. So if he can play 30 minutes a game in the playoffs, that would be huge.
Yeah, his nickname on Box Basketball Reference is Judah and the Minister of Defense.
Wow. That's pretty good.
Yeah. That's all.
We're ready for the playoffs, man. Let's go.
Yeah, I'm excited, and the thing that's got me really more excited about the playoffs is that unlike the men's March Madness, the women's March Madness tournament really got me more and more warmed up for the championship season. That was a heck of a last few weeks keeping up with those March Madness games, and then Caitlin Clark getting drafted number one on Monday. I watched that live as well. Watch Angel Reese and some of those folks, Cardosa and Brink at second. Was a hell of a night, and I'm super excited for the WNBA, because now I'm excited that we get the playoffs, and then we roll right into the WNBA season to see how this new young core does there. But it's a really interesting time, I think, to be a basketball fan. We're at a crossroads, I feel.
Yeah, it really does feel like a revolution. I mean, you've never seen so much social media, so much news reporters, so many journalists talking about the women's basketball league. Mm-hmm. And I mean, this has been a long time coming. I mean, we've seen a lot of talented women players come and go. But they were really the ones that I think paved the way. And I think this could be the class that actually puts the WNBA on the map between Caitlin Clark, Camila Cardoso, Angel Reese. I mean, these are players that are kind of like symbols for the game, icons in the sport, more so than I think any other player has been. And with them all coming into the league at once, it does seem like it's ushering in a new era for the WNBA. Where people are actually saying they should make more money, which, yeah, they should make more money. It's absolutely insane that Caitlin Clark's salary is like $75K, where James Harden got fined $100K for calling Daryl Morey a liar.
That's funny. That's funny when you put it that way.
What a society we live in, yeah. Right? So for me, I do think that this is going to be the beginning of this era where, I mean, and this happened with the NBA too, was that, you know, it went for years and years, and, you know, it really wasn't a profitable business until you got some of the icons of the game coming in, like Larry Bird, like Michael Jordan, like Magic Johnson. They put basketball on the map. And so can these girls put women's basketball on the map? I really think they can. I sure hope they do.
Yeah, same here. I was going to say, I was trying to think of like a good NBA comparison when I was thinking about this draft. I was like, is it like the 1980 draft when like Magic Johnson, or 1979 when Magic Johnson came in? Mm-hmm. Or is it 96 when Kobe, Garnett and those guys came in? To me, it feels like more like 2003 where you had Bron.
Carmelo. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, D. Wade. It was sort of like that handoff point between the Michael Jordan generation and then now over to this new era of the guys that are going to carry the NBA through the internet era, social media, the start of the social media era. And really, because really it was once LeBron started doing his thing and those guys, that was when we really saw the surge in the salary caps, the ridiculousness there. And this feels a lot like that, where I think like you had your, you know, like Sue Bird, Diana Taurasi, Lisa Leslie, those were your Jordans, those were your Magics and Larrys. But like, I think Caitlin Clark and these girls are really going to be like the LeBrons and Carmelo, where I think they're going to carry this league and capitalize in big way from the foundation that was started before. And I'm excited. I think it's going to be crazy. And we're missing a name from here too, Paige Buckers, who decided to go back to UConn for one more year.
She should have went to this draft too, man. Like, this could have been a super stacked draft if she went in there. And I don't know. I don't even know what the rules are for WNBA, but Juju Watkins should be on this list too. Like, she's already ready for the pros.
Yeah,
but she gets the collector NIL deal, so she'll be fine. But yeah, I mean, this could have been the talent coming up is absolutely massive, and I think it's just going to get better and better. The more women get into the game or inspired by these icons, it's all going to be good for the sport.
Yeah, I got one name for you. Why Paige Buckers went for one more year at UConn. Joe Lacob, the Bay Area is getting a women's team next year. They're gonna have the number one draft pick.
Paige Buckers. Is that true? Is there an expansion team next year?
Yes.
Oh man, that's hilarious.
Paige Buckers is coming to the Bay Area just as one Bay Area team comes to its dwindling end. Comes up.
Wow, so poetic.
We'll see. But yes, I mean, I think. Back to Caitlin Clark, I think it was kind of cool to see that the Indianapolis Fieldhouse where the Pacers played sold out from people just instantly. Wanting. Yeah, just not only for the future games, but they sold out just to watch the draft.
Yes. Which is crazy. It's just the draft. Like, I don't even watch the NBA draft a lot of times.
Yeah. But people packed the field house just to watch Caitlin Clark, get drafted at number one by Indiana. So
much relies on her becoming the LeBron of the WNBA. Mm-hmm. It's a lot to shoulder, but I feel like, I mean, just watching interviews with her and seeing her composure, I don't think there's anyone that's more up to the task than she is.
Yeah, I agree. And it's not going to be easy, right? It's like, I keep telling people who maybe aren't as familiar with the WNBA, I'm like, look at Sabrina Ionescu. She was killing college, but she didn't make her first All-Star game until second, third year in the WNBA. Takes time. Right. And she's not even the best player on her team yet. Brianna Stewart's still the best player on that squad.
Yeah, no, it's going to be interesting because, I mean, you got Diana Taurasi saying that, you know, these rookies coming in, they're going to be in for a rude awakening. Like, it's a different sport. You play these, and it's true, you play, there's only 12 teams right now. Maybe there'll be more next year, but you play them so many times that people start to understand how to play against you. You know, it's like a playoff series where if people figure out how to defend you, you can't hide behind an 82-game regular season against 30 other teams.
Right. Yeah, I don't even really know what Iowa's schedule was like, but I got to imagine there were some throwaway games in that Iowa schedule up until the tournament.
There will be no throwaway games here. She's starting from the bottom, and the Fever are the worst team in the league, so... See what she can do with not a the deck stacked for her.
Yeah. Yep. And this Las Vegas Aces game against the Fever will of course be on prime time. Aces moving them to a venue with 6K extra seats. I just don't. The Las Vegas Aces are good. It's gonna be. It might just end up being a blowout. The Indiana Fever are definitely gonna have to come out with their best game.
Also cool that the Aces actually in the second round drafted Caitlin Clark's teammate Kate Martin.
Yeah. So
that'll be a little reunion.
Yeah, exactly. I thought that was awesome to see. I'm sure it was awesome for her to see her teammate get drafted as well. It's exciting stuff to come, I think, here for basketball fans, NBA included, NBA and WNBA included.
Yeah. Maybe we'll start a WNBA fantasy basketball league this year.
Hey man, I was looking at the power ranking. I was looking at power rankings of WNBA players the other day. Who are the best players coming to the season?
You're already doing your research. You're already going to start this league without me, aren't you?
Yeah, and then I was like, man, there's actually not a lot of stuff out there about this. Like, where are all these articles? Like, I mean, the NBA articles go all the way down to, like, number 100.
Maybe this could be our new niche, man. Maybe we could become the WNBA podcast.
we could see. Hey,
that might not go well though, because we're two guys. I don't think they'd really appreciate that.
We'll see.
Or maybe they like that we're into it so much. Who knows?
Yeah, we'll see how it goes. The summertime is always a slow time for the NBA. At times. For the NBA.
Oh, you know my favorite day of the year is in the summer for the NBA.
Right.
So
free agency.
Yes,
free agency. All right, y'all. Thanks for tuning in, and don't forget to check us out week in and week out.
Yes, sir. Have a good week, everybody.